Today on Wings. Kenya is a country with a wide variety of cultural communities. Reporter Diana Wanyonyi traveled to some near the Kenya coast to see what they are doing to protect girls from gender-based violence.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In Junda area in coastal Kenya, a group of young girls are playing drums and singing in Giriama traditional songs from the Mijikenda community. Mijikenda is basically a community that is made up of 9 tribes, which include Giriama, Digo, Duruma, Rabai, Kambe, Chonyi, Jibana, Kauma, and Ribe. They largely live along the Kenyan coast, mostly found in the Mombasa, Kilifi, and Kwale counties. It takes me approximately 25 minutes on a public motorbike, locally known as Boda Boda, from where I stay to Junda in Kisauni constituency.
Kabisa. Wona hii barabara yenye mtu wa mkokoteni anasukuma hiyo yenye ametokelezea huko mtu wa mkokoteni.
Here, I met Fadila Juma, a girl who is 21 years old. At her tender age, she is the confidant of many teenage girls in her area. Many girls reach unto her on matters that are pressing them, such as forced early marriages, teenage pregnancies, gender-based violence, and some being coerced to engage in child prostitution. Fadila is the bridge or channel between teenagers and local administration. This means that she has to accompany a girl who is a victim to the local administration so as to report the matter.
Mimi niko na miaka 21. So wengi wako like mimi ndo easier channel leo kufika kwa mzee wa mtaa ama kwa chifu. So they find it hard kwenda kwa mzee wa mtaa ama kwa chifu. So mtu akiwa na shida na kufanya.
I am 21 years old. Many girls see me as an easy channel for them to reach local administration. When a girl has a problem, she finds it hard to go to the nearest administration to report the matter. They instead request me to accompany them to the office to report an incident. They believe and trust in me that I will speak and address their matters to the relevant authorities because they know I will help them. Many cases reported here in Junda are early pregnancies, sexual gender-based violence, and gender-based violence. You might find a girl of 13 or 14 years has dropped out of school and is forced to get married.
They believe in me and they trust me. Kwa nikiambia Fadila hii kitu tukienda naye kwa mzee wa mtaa atatusaidia.
Fadila is a busy girl. Her mobile phone was ringing endlessly during our interview. After we were done with our interview, she picked her phone and started conversing with a girl whom she told me later she was directing her to where she is so that they can meet and have a discussion on gender-based violence.
Dhulma zenye ziko pa Junda ni mimba za mapema na pia GBV na SGBV. Hizo ndo ziko pa sana. So unakuta mtoto wa miaka 13.
Fadila is a member of the She Leads program. She Leads focuses on increasing the influence of girls and young women in decision-making and the transformation of gender norms in formal and informal institutions in Kenya and fighting the ending of sexual exploitation of children. The She Leads program is implemented in East Africa, in Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya. In West Africa, it is implemented in Ghana, Mali, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. In the Middle East, it is implemented in Lebanon and Jordan.
The girls that we are working directly with are in Junda. And these are girls who are vulnerable, girls who are at risk in many ways, and who need their voices to be amplified.
Peggy Namadi Masika is a grassroots leader and a child rights advocate and cost coordinator for Kenya Alliance for Advancement of Children.
Yeah, we are focusing on providing them opportunities. We do outreaches. We form groups. We help them form pressure groups. And then through groups, they prepare messages. They go out, do outreaches. We have intergenerational dialogues with the community at the community level. And then they have sessions like this. And then we bring government. Like the session we're having right now is a regional forum focusing on sexual exploitation of children and then having the girls amplify their voices. So we have brought three countries, Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya together. We have an MP from Ethiopia, an MP from Uganda, and a politician from Kenya who have come together with the girls to have that dialogue. I mean, this is practical. What has emerged is that gender-based violence is high in all sectors. Even the politicians who are here, they're like, when we are doing campaigns, if it's the lady and the man standing here, the questions they would ask the woman, why are you here? Who is your husband? Are you married? How many children do you have? Who's your father-in-law? Where do you come from? They will try, are you pregnant? Are you on your periods? I mean, that is violence that is happening in the political side. Even in parliament and even in the assemblies, they're even discriminated against, not being given certain positions in committees. Because, I mean, you're a woman, you can't handle. There's one of the girls who was here who's working on the engines in the marine where they're like, you're a girl, how? You know? So there's so much gender-based violence happening. Even in our own offices, the pay is never the same. It's never the same. It's never, ever, ever the same. I have to work 2-3 times harder to achieve what my fellow counterpart is achieving. So in the three countries, you could hear the same things coming out, girls being looked down upon.
Peggy Namadi Masika is cost coordinator for Kenya Alliance for Advancement of Children. It's 9 a.m. in the morning. I have boarded a public van, commonly known as Matatu, heading to Kisauni to Naila Abdallah's office here in Mombasa City. As I enter her office, I found her busy working on her laptop. We had a brief chat, and after some 5 minutes or so, we started our interview.
I'm Naila Abdallah. I'm a human rights defender, and I have passion in human rights work, community empowerment, rule of law and justice. I'm a mother of one. I've done business management as a professional. I'm inspired by defending women and raising up for women and changing the narrative of women in our society. As a Muslim woman, I seek to change the narrative and break the cultural barriers that deny Muslims women opportunity to meaningful participate in development process to improve their well-being. GBV has really, really increased during this pandemic of COVID-19. We've seen pregnant women, when the due time comes and the curfew is there, struggling not to go to the clinics, fearing that they'll be victimized to be a COVID-19 patient. We've seen gender-based violence increasing day by day, whereby men try to release their anger or release their stress to their wives, leading to different injuries. We've seen a very increased number on early pregnancy, especially teenage pregnancies, because of COVID-19, whereby most of the children return home during pandemic and they've been left with their parents. Surprisingly, the parents were unable to take care of their children to an extent that almost 4,000 girls across the country have been impregnated without them knowing. There is a big gap between the families nowadays. parents, they lack a role model, they lack cultural morals, they lack, I don't know, but it's high time for the society to pull up their socks and accept your neighbor's daughter or your neighbor's children are your children. We should get back to our normal norms. We should get back to our normal culture whereby someone's parents is your parent, someone's father is your father, someone's mother is your mother, whereby they can be able to advise, or they can able to take care of your children or other children in the society. I remember very well African traditions in those times, or in our times, that I was able to be advised, to be directed, sometimes even to be caned by a neighbor when seeing me or when seeing us in a bad company, bad pressure, or bad situation.
On Wings, you're listening to interviews conducted in Kenya by Diana Wanyonyi. Here she's interviewing Naila Abdallah, a founder of Sisters for Justice. Abdallah says Kisauni, where they are based, has long had a reputation for crime, but is starting to improve. Her group interviewed criminal youth to try to understand the issues.
They ended up saying most of the time we involve our girlfriends. They'll go and get a man maybe at the road for maybe sleeping with them, but it's a trap. So those girls, they trap them, and they normally have a signal with their boyfriends or with their people that manze leo nimebeba ngombe. If wakijua tu ni ngombe, they know it's a good deal. Maybe someone who has a car is coming to Kisauni. Sometimes themselves, girls, they try to attack, and they rob everything. And most of them, they are not on their normal senses. They've taken maybe drugs that make them not to have any fear, you know. But currently, things have really changed because the youth, the boyfriend themselves, they've changed. Many youth have been killed in front of their girlfriends and boyfriends and mothers and fathers. So there's a little bit of fear. Maybe if they still continue, they'll be killed. But the word came out is poverty. Most of the people are idle, and young ones are the ones who are idle. And there's no any social amenities. There's no any employment. Eh? Obvious, your brain is still fresh. It's still idle. You will just get something. But if there is employment for them, there is social amenities, there is activity that keeps them busy. Obviously, at the end of the day, they'll be tired and they will go to their homes and sleep.
Esther Ingolo is a former radio journalist in Kenya. Now she is the director for gender and social services at Mombasa County.
My name is Esther Ingolo. I'm the County Director for Gender and Social Services at the County Government of Mombasa, in the Department of Youth, Gender, Sports and Cultural Affairs.
You're also a former journalist.
I'm also a former journalist, having worked in radio for about 9 years.
How was it being a journalist?
It was a lot of fun. I think of all the days that have been good days, those were the good days for me when I wasn't ready. Yes.
I used to be one of your favorite audience, and I remember you used to do a lot of stories and talk show about children, gender-based violence. Can you tell us about it?
Strangely, I think you can remember very well that while I was on radio, we were christened, myself and my co-host, we were christened the name Shuja. Shuja meaning hero, for the boldness that we had to go out and do stories that people were not comfortable doing and stories that everyone was scared to do. But then I think it's a passion that pushed me to do that, and the urge to want a change within the society is what drove me to do those particular stories. And I must say that I met someone in a tuk-tuk just yesterday, actually, I had boarded a tuk-tuk with one of my colleagues. And my colleague at some point mentioned the name Esther Ingolo. And the driver, like, literally almost stopped at the road and said, "Where did she go to?" And the lady started asking her, "Do you know her?" And said, "I know her. She was a very good presenter. She used to do Mega Breakfast. She did with Alex. She did with..." He actually mentioned my entire story. And I was seated at the back just listening. And my colleague asked, "Do you remember her in good light or in bad light?" He said, "There has never been a show that will be that powerful. I could not miss that show every single day. I was an addict. Ever since she left, I have never listened to radio again." And that's how I realized that the stories that we did were quite impactful. And I think now, in retrospect, I think the stories that I was doing at the time have really been a compass to where I am right now. Because now, about 15 years down the line, now I'm doing full-time human rights defending, which I was doing at that time in radio, and I did not even know that that is what I was doing. Until now, someone told me you're a human rights defender. I was like, I have been a human rights defender for all my life, really. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you remember one of the stories that you did about gender-based violence?
Yes, I actually remember two very, very powerful stories. One of it, there was a girl who was pregnant by the father, and in Shariani area in Kilifi County. The girl did not know that she was pregnant. So the whole time, she just thought that she had a stomach upset. And she kept saying, "I have a stomach upset every day." And the stomach kept getting harder. And she did not know. And the lady who referred that case to us only noticed at the time that the girl was 8 months, when she was just about to deliver. And I remember we went all the way to Shariani to a very hostile father, who first of all, Alikata, actually said he did not do it. But now, after sitting with the girl said that the man had been molesting her since she was 4 years old, and at the time, she was only 15. And it was one of the biggest stories, because we managed to rescue her to a safe house where she delivered her baby safely, and the baby was taken to CCI, which is a charitable child institution. Then she actually went back to school. And save for that, we did another story for Taita Taveta County, and that one, the grandfather was defiling the granddaughter. And everyone had been unable to talk to the man because the man was very hostile. And I remember when we went there with my colleague, Dennis, when we got to the homestead, and he knew who we were after asking several questions. The man told us to wait. He went into his bedroom and he came out with a panga. We actually had to run for our lives. But after that, we went to the children's office in Taita Taveta. And I'm glad to say that the man was actually jailed for about 7 years because he was old at the time and he couldn't serve a very long sentence. But at least the case managed to go to that level. So those are the two stories that I remember, which I did at around 2008, even before I knew that I was going to one day be in charge of gender. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you tell us about gender initiative here in Mombasa County, the container office, why the push, and how are people responding to the services?
During COVID, everything went on a standstill, and we were left with a situation where we had people who had gone through gender-based violence, but they could not report. They could not leave the house because of the cessation and the stay-at-home order. And so everything was in shambles. And even you can remember at the time, they had to change the GVRC center to an isolation center. And one time, I have two of the partners that I work with, actually three of the partners that I work with very closely. That is Liz from ActionAid, Topista from Muhuri, and Violet from Sauti ya Wanawake Pwani, which are very strong CSOs within Mombasa. And one day we sat, actually it was right here outside this particular facility that we are in of Tononoka, and we were wondering, what are we going to do? And just in one moment, I told them, okay, I have a container that is just here that we are not using. Maybe we can open the container and start helping people. Let's call it the situation room so that we can help people, you know, that are unable to go and report their cases. And at that point, with no single shilling in the pocket, with nothing, like no resources, no nothing, we went the next day, got the key, opened the center, and we started work. And along the line, after 1 week, Sauti ya Wanawake managed to be able to get us a toll-free line, which was fully supported by Reinvent. And after getting the toll-free line, Muhuri and ActionAid brought furniture, the chairs, the tables. We had someone bring water. We had other people bring a crew. They brought sanitary towels. And within 1 month, you cannot believe it, the center was fully fledged and busy. Because after about those 2 months, we decided that we are going now to sensitize the community about first the toll-free line, so that they can be aware that we are here and we have a center that they can be able to call in case they have been violated. And two, we had a place that they could come and be able to get help and also get referrals, because at that point everyone was confused. They did not know where to go in case anything happened. I think you remember, for a very long time, COVID made everything go to a standstill for a very long time. So at that point, and actually strange enough, among the first cases that we had, two of them were cases of men. Very first cases that we had. One for a child and the two for men on the first few days that we opened the situation room. And at that point, we told ourselves, okay, if we are having men reporting, this is becoming interesting. We need to keep the center open. And after 6 months, it was clear in my mind that I was never going to close the center, even after COVID, because of the response that we got from the people. First of all, it became a safe space for a lot of the residents of Mombasa, because people felt that for the longest time they never had a place where they could come and have someone listen to them, have someone assist them, have someone refer them, have someone accompany them to court, because we have the officers within the situation room, community workers and social workers, who accompany the survivors to court. I think you understand the court process is quite complicated and draining for a lot of the survivors, considering what they have gone through. And it's not even just for the survivors, even the caretakers. So you find it's very easy for them to give up along the way, because probably they do not understand the court process, or they have external forces from the perpetrator or the perpetrator's family, or even the line officers, either police or children's department or anybody else within the referral pathway of gender-based violence. One word and the survivor gets totally demoralized and feels that they will not get justice. So we decided that we're going to hold the hand of the survivor from the beginning to the end. To the point that they access justice, we will be with them in the whole process. And we have been able to do that for all our clients, just holding their hand to the last moment. As we were doing that, we discovered that even as we were pushing for access to justice, I remember one particular case where the perpetrator was jailed for 40 years. The child died, unfortunately, from the defilement. And when the ruling was done, you can imagine 40 years, the mother sat in the crowd. Everybody was clapping. We were elated because this is the toughest sentence that we've had since we opened the situation room. And the mother was seated there totally blank. And after the court case, I spoke to her. I was like, "Mama, how do you feel?" She said, "I feel okay." I said, "Are you happy with the ruling?" She said, "I'm happy. At least my daughter will get justice." And she was actually quite quiet. So after about 10 minutes, then she pulled me aside and asked me, "Madam, is this all?" And I said, "Yes. You have access to justice, the perpetrator is in jail." And she said, "Just like that? So what will happen to me?" And at that point, I realized that she had not healed from the trauma. So from that point, we had to bring in now counselors and psychologists to be able now to assist us in the process, because we realized that access to justice is very important and paramount. But then, if the survivor and the caretaker never get trauma healing, then they will never even be able to celebrate the gains they will make as far as justice is concerned. So then that was actually our first client that we took through counseling. and she actually relieved so many things, and we realized that she needed to heal at that particular point. So since then, we introduced a psychosocial section and a counseling room that now we engage a lot of the survivors through counseling, all the 8 sessions for free without paying anything, because in the Kenyan market right now, if you are to go to a psychologist per session, 45 minutes, you'll have to pay around 3,500 shillings. That's the lowest in the market. So we realized that most of our survivors are struggling with basically everything. So at the point that we want to charge them, they will not be able to afford that. And so we introduced the free counseling, which has been a game changer for the entire situation group. Because then at this point, even Shanzu Children Court and Tononoka Children Court, a lot of the magistrates are sending the children to come for counseling at the center, because they see the impact that the counseling is having on the survivors, specifically the survivors and the caretakers. Because we also realized that when we do the counseling for the survivor alone, the caretaker is at the same place and the survivor is healing. So the caretaker keeps re-traumatizing the survivor because they have not healed. So then we introduced psychotherapy sessions, which we do every Saturday for 13 weeks. And those psychotherapy sessions are specific for the children and the parents, the guardian, the caretaker, or the anybody who is in the life of that child. Why we do that is so that they can heal together as a family unit, and they can be able to deal with the issue together. Because in one of the sessions that we were doing with the parents, we were asking the parents, do you know what happened to your child? That simple question, most of the parents could not answer. They could not mention the body parts by mouth. They could not even narrate the whole story. So we realized that they were actually even more affected than the survivors, because the survivors could retell the story, but they could not bring themselves to even mentioning what happened to either their daughter, sister, or whoever it is that was the survivor. So at that point, we realized that if we do not make the two heal together, then we'll still have a gap. And the only way to fill that gap was to introduce psychotherapy sessions that will be able now to take care of both the survivor and the parent or the guardian. And so far, we've reached out to about, since we started the program, we've reached out to about 66 families within Mombasa County, all of them who have benefited from the 13-week psychotherapy sessions, which are filled with the skill training, teaching them about emotions, teaching them about feelings, teaching them about what to look out just in case someone goes through gender-based violence. And I'm glad that out of the 66 families, we now have even champions who are now helping us with the work within the community to be able now to send cases our way. And also, when we are doing sensitization sessions within the community, we involve those particular parents because they are speaking from a lived experience.
That was Esther Ingolo, who is a former journalist in Kenya. Now she is the director for gender and social services at Mombasa County on the Kenyan coast. And I am Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa.
Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose writings and events can be found through the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. For more about Wings, email wings@wings.org, or look for Wings Radio on Facebook. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.